to jump right into the Word. I want to start by asking, remember, I told you guys a while back, you may not remember or not, but we recently got a dog. We've had a new dog for a little over a year now. It was funny. We had a dog, 13 years. I don't know when Peanut had to go for a walk in the woods, but he didn't come back from that. But he was old, he was blind, there's a lot of things happening, so I'm just saying, all right, move on from that. That's not the point of the story, all right? Point is, we had a dog for like 13 years. We loved the dog. It was a wonderful dog. It was great. But he passed, okay? And then we were like, praise the Lord. We have our life back, okay? And then after about 3 or so years of that being freedom and loving life, we had one child, who remained nameless, wanted another dog. We did not want our dog. So there's one child just proceeded to ask and ask, oh, we need to, and so we're like, okay. So, and I'm going to throw my wife under the bus here. She was the first one to cave and said, all right, maybe we should look at this. So we did. We started looking into it. And, of course, one of our daughters is very allergic to, like, outside and the trees and pollen and all that and dogs and cats and all this stuff. And so, of course, the dog had to be hyperallergenic, okay? Then, of course, we don't want a shedding dog, okay? So that's like two strikes. Add those two things together and start looking for a dog, and you could buy a small car. Okay? And so this was wonderful news for me. I'm like, well, I'm not paying that for a dog, so we're not getting a dog. Praise the Lord. Answer the prayer. Boom. Right? Let's go. And so I was excited. We kind of took that off the table. And lo and behold, about a month after all this transpired, a lady at my wife's work comes to the office. Anybody wants a puppy? It's hyperallergenic. Oh, of course it is. And it doesn't shed. Of course it doesn't. And she's like, and the best part, it's free. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. What in the world's going on here? And so, of course, you know, like, oh, okay. So I get the picture. Like, yeah, it's cute, right? And like, Melissa's like, well, maybe we should go look at it. That's like the kiss of death right there. Right? There's no coming back. After you hold the puppy, there's no coming back. So we go, we look at the puppy, and it's this little ball of fur. I mean, it's the cutest thing you've ever seen. Of course, we get sucked into it, and we get the puppy. Now this cute little ball of fur, we bring it home. We surprise the kids. We walk in. It comes in behind us, kind of just very shimmishly, you know, whatever, bucking in, and the kids see it, they go crazy, and of course it goes crazy and runs and hides. And this little thing, I mean, it took up this much space. I mean, nothing, right? Okay, well, fast forward a year now. And so within that year, it's like quadrupled in size. It's no longer a little ball of fur. It's a great big ball of fur now. It will knock my wife over if you let it, right? It's just a big dog. I'm even embarrassed to say the name, but it's a labradoodle. And so it's part lab. So it's the size of a lab, but curly as all get out, right? And I'll give him his credit. He's cute, okay? But now this little once little thing that took up nothing of us now dominates our life. Like it has its own line item in our budget now. Boomer, okay? This stupid dog, we go to a grocery store, and like half the cart belongs to the dog. Because you got to get it snacks, right? He's got potty treats. So if he goes potty, he gets a treat, right? But then he also has, like, if we leave the house, you got to give him a stick. Because now he's trained to get these little chew sticks. And when you pull one of them out, he runs and crates himself. I mean, it's pretty cool. But he's got to get a treat. And so we got to give him that. We got to get him food. I mean, it's ridiculous. This past Friday, how ridiculous this dog is dominating our life. Anytime we go anywhere, it's like, well, we could go here for a few days. We go here. No. It's not that easy. Because then you got to factor in Boomer. What's going to happen to Boomer? Who's going to watch over Boomer? Who's going to take care of Boomer? We can't leave Boomer home alone. I'm like, stupid dog. Controlling our life. What's even worse is this dog gets it on spa day now. Last Friday, I had to take him to the spa day. He gets a haircut. He gets a manicure. I mean, he gets all these things. Comes out with a cute little bandana around his neck. I'm like, stupid dog. I spent how much on this dog? It's ridiculous. Like, this little cute little thing that started off taking nothing now literally dominates our life. And the sad part is we asked for it. We're like, we're so dumb. I mean, we had freedom from this. Why would you go back to that? And that's kind of where our story is at today. We're going to 1 Samuel chapter 8. We see this played out with the children of Israel. Look at verse 4. It starts with this. It says, then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, behold, you are old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint for us a king to judge us. Look at the last part. Like all the nations. Big red flag. My Bible in the heading, it says Israel demands a king. Okay, when you're talking to God, that's usually not a good stance to take. So that should be a big red warning for everybody here where the story is going. Let's keep reading. Verse 6 says, But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, obey the voice of the people in all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, talking about Samuel, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Okay, so first thing I want to point out, it wasn't categorically wrong for Israel to ask for a king. Because in Deuteronomy, God actually told them that one day they're going to have a king over them. And in Deuteronomy 17, God kind of lays out the qualifications of the king for them. And so it wasn't wrong in them requesting a king. The problem was the motivation behind the ask. Namely, the request came from a place of fear and not a place of faith. They weren't saying, God, we trust you. We're asking for the king you promised, but only in your timetable and only your choice. They weren't asking like that at all. They felt like they needed a king for two reasons. Look at it. The first reason they wanted a king, they needed a king, was in verse 5. We want to be like all the other nations. Well, that's wrong. And then the second reason they needed a king was that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. And so they want a king because they look around all the nations around them and they have kings. And their king, other nations, the king seemed to provide this sense of pride for them, sense of identity, and sense of security. And they didn't have that. All they had was the promises of the invisible God. How many feels like that sometimes? Like, I want identity, I want security, I want happiness, but I have Jesus. You're like, okay, well, Jesus is not here. I can't see him, I can't touch him, I can't talk to him in a normal sense like you would think. So you're thinking the same thing the Israelites are thinking at the time. And God considered this as a rejection of him. Because here's the thing, they weren't supposed to be like all the other nations. They were set apart. They were supposed to be different, fundamentally different than all the other nations. Same way with you and I. We're not to look like everybody else. We're not to find our happiness, our joy, and our identity in the things of this world. We are set apart. We're supposed to look different, fundamentally different. And so for the Israelites, their relationship with God was supposed to be the source of those things. And so essentially they're just rejecting God. And so God continues in verse 8. He says, according to all the deeds that they have done, from the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, forsaken me and serving other gods, so they are also doing to you. Do you catch that? God is saying from the very beginning, I've never been enough for them. Think back when Moses went up the mountain to get the law from God, right? They think about what just happened. God just delivered them miraculously from Egyptian's army by destroying the whole army in the Red Sea. Then Moses is a few days late from coming back down, and all of a sudden they're like, Aaron, make us a golden calf so we can have a God to protect us like all the other nations. Are incredible. And then think about the wilderness experience, right? God leads them in wilderness. He said, you know, I'm taking you to a land flowing with milk and honey. And in the wilderness journey, what did they see? They see manna from heaven. They see little bird nuggets outside their tent doors. I mean, it's awesome. Water's coming from a rock. They see all that that God's provided. And in the midst of even all that, in the wilderness, like, God, take us back to Egypt. Are you kidding me? How many times are they going to reject God? They want to, after all that God's done, they're saying, God, you're still not enough. We need a king like all the other nations. A king's going to go fight our battles. Are you kidding me? What just happened? Like in chapter 7, okay, they got all high and mighty. Remember we talked about last week? They thought, well, let's just throw the presence of God at them. Let's use God, and maybe God will win the battle against the Philistines. Well, how'd that work out for them? Well, it didn't. The Philistines captured the ark, took the ark, which didn't work out for them either. But what did God do? God wins the battle basically from two cows and a cart. That literally just happened, and so now Israel gets the ark back, which is, represents the presence of God. That just happened. I mean, God just defeated the Philistines, and now they're like, we want a king. I mean, when you have a God who fights for you like this, why are you demanding an earthly king? It's crazy. On one level, they're pretty silly, but they make a serious point. So Israel has a God who fights for them. Sure, they have an army, and one day God's going to give them king, but they're not supposed to trust in those things. They're supposed to trust in God. This is so important for you here. In none of the stories we shared with you from Israel's history did they walk away from God. I want you to see that this morning. All the examples, they didn't walk away from God. It's just that he wasn't enough. It wasn't that they didn't want God. It's like they said, well, I need God plus this. You catching it? I need God plus a king. I need God plus an army. I need God. And God considers this a rejection of him. And this is the way it usually happens. We replace God not by walking away from him, but adding to him. So I want to ask you this morning, where have you done this? Where have you said, God, you're not enough? Now, I hope none of us would be brave enough to ever say that. But some of our actions say that. God, you're not enough. God, if I had this. God is great, but I need something else to ensure my significance, my happiness, my security. Maybe you're in here this morning and say, God is great, but I have to have a relationship, and then I'll be happy. I can never be happy like everybody else unless I had a relationship. And that's not wrong. What's wrong is you're asking from fear and not faith. Fear of being alone, unwanted, unloved. And you think a relationship's the only way that can happen. Or you're like, God, I got to have this career advancement. I got to have that promotion. I got to have, like all the other people. Again, it's not wrong to ask those things. It's just when you can't be happy without that, without the professional development, or without the income increase, that shows a fear of being motivated just by fear. Like, I can't be happy. I can't feel secure until I reach this level of significance or this level of income, and then I will be. So you're saying, God, plus this. Or God, I got to have this healing. I don't even want to live unless you heal me this way. Again, you're being motivated by fear. I can't be happy or feel faith or feel safe or secure unless I have this plus God. Whatever that thing is that you're demanding in addition to God is your king. That's one of the big problems I have with prosperity gospel. Prosperity gospel essentially assumes life can't be good without physical prosperity. Excuse me. So prosperity gospel teaches you that if you follow God correctly and have faith, he'll guarantee those things. But the thing is, that's built on the assumption that the good life is abundance of those things, which is exactly what the Israelites are thinking. But again, we're supposed to be thinking different. And so it's not found in those things, right? It says God's presence, prosperity gospel is like God's presence and promises make me more secure with these things. And God's like, those things were never meant to bring that to you. know what James calls this line of thinking? You're being an adulterer. Look at it in James 4:3. It says, you ask and you do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. You adulterous people. So he's saying, what James is saying is you're missing a lot. One, because you don't ask. But then when you do ask, you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. You adulterous people. And so sometimes we get this confused. And so what does it mean? Well, think about adultery, okay? I think we all could agree adultery is when one spouse finds certain delights in someone else he should be finding in his spouse, okay, adultery. Spiritual adultery is when you find happiness, security, and things you ought to find in God. Adultery. So God's saying, you're supposed to find your security, your identity, your happiness in me. He said, but you're asking for me plus the raise, plus the relationship, plus the house, plus the car, plus the kids. And he's saying, you're being adulterous because all the happiness is supposed to be found in me. It's me plus nothing equals everything. But we're off track. We think, I got to have this. I got to have this in my life, and then I'll be happy. James, like, you're praying like an adulterer. And God's just asking, why can't you find those things in me? Like, we need to get to a place where we're like David. Remember what David? David said, Lord is my shepherd, therefore I have no needs. As long as he's close, he said he'd be close, he's enough. And so again, rejection of God is not usually walking away from God, but it's demanding something in addition to God. So God considers Israel's demand for a king a rejection of him. It's crazy because watch what God says next to Samuel about this. About this cute little thing you brought in your house. He's going to give you a warning. Look at verse 9. He says, now then, obey their voice. The voice is what God's saying. Only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them. So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking for a king from him. He said, these will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. Listen, he will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots. He will take your daughters to be performers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards, olive orchards, and give them to his servants. He will take the tenth of your grain and your vineyards and give them to his officers and servants. He will take your male servants and female servants and the best of your young men and your donkeys and put them to work. He will take the tenth of your flock, and you shall be his slaves. In that day you will cry out because your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. Look at the key word and all that. What is it? Take. He's saying he will take. He's going to take your sons. He's going to take your daughters. He's going to take your livestock. He's going to take your land. He's going to take your servants. You get the theme of it? He's going to take. This cute little furry ball we took in, it's taking. It's taking over our life. And that's why he's saying that's what you're going to get. So, all right, you want it? This is what he's going to get. He's going to take from you. The king they demanded, Saul. Impressive, physically impressive. Good looking, great warrior, head and shoulders above everybody else. He's going to end his life in battle when he loses against the Philistines. Listen, every king but God enslaves. So whatever king you give your life to is going to take from you. Our earthly kings will demand a man from you. Whether metaphorically, whether it's like success, money, it's never going to be enough. Let me read you 18 to 22 again. It says, in that day you will cry out because your king, whom you have chosen for yourself, but the Lord will not answer in that day. But the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel and said, no, but there shall be a king over us. Even after all the warnings, hey, he's going to slave you, he's going to take, we want a king. So verse 20 says, then we also may be like all the other nations and that our king may judge us and go out before us to fight our battles. And the Lord said to Samuel, obey their voice and make them a king. Let the worship team come on up. I need to wrap this up. One of the saddest phrases in the whole book of 1 Samuel is that later it says all of Israel's heart went towards Saul. That broke the Lord. That broke God's heart. All of Israel's heart went to the Lord. It was supposed to go to God. Remember, they said, God, we want you, but we want this king. We want this in our life. We got to have this to feel happy, to feel satisfied, to feel secure. And when that happens, undoubtedly when that happens, your heart's going to go to the things. And undoubtedly they're going to let you down. You know how I know? We went garage selling yesterday. Enjoy my day yesterday. We go garage sale. Willer has their citywide garage sale, right? And it's comical when you go to garage sale, isn't it? You go to garage sale, and what you're going to buy is things people don't want no more. So you go and you say, hey, what things do you not want in your life no more? Here they are. Like, oh, awesome. I will take those things. I will love those things. Until a few months more, they're going to be in my garage sale. I mean, it's the most ridiculous thing ever, right? I mean, we buy these things from the garage sale. Oh, we're getting a great deal. Yeah. But then you're going to sell them for less than what you pay them. It's not a great deal. But you're buying unwanted things because you think they're going to bring joy and happiness to your life. And in a few months, they don't. That's what we see playing out before us in 1 Samuel chapter 8. They wanted these things. Oh, this will be it. And it is for a couple days. And then it's not. And then you put a little sticker on it that says 50 cents. Here you go. Somebody's going to come along and that's going to be the best day of their life right there. For a couple days. And you see this playing out. And it's crazy. Let me show you one of the saddest verses in our chapter today, verse 18. All these things happen, you don't find the joy, you don't find security, you don't find happiness. Verse 18 says that one day you cry out because your king, whom you've chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. You know, sometimes the hardest things to do is when people won't learn, you just give it to them. Those of you who have kids, you understand this. You warn your kid, you warn your kid, you warn your kid. They're like, no, I want it, right? Like, they want to eat the whole cake. Like, no, just a slice. You sneak back in there, eat piece after piece. Like, not good for you. No. A couple hours later, like, you know, they're hurling up in the bathroom because they ate too much. You got a great story. Lincoln loved popcorn. Don't tell him I told you this. Lincoln's the biggest popcorn fan in the world. Movie theater popcorn. One day, him and I, we have the same loves. We're at the movies, we've got the whole gallon of popcorn here, we're just going to town. We get a refill, we're going to town, right? He's little. We took 2 cars away home, he's in the back of the car, and I got a great picture somewhere on my phone. Back car, there's a big ton of popcorn, and then, like, regurgitated popcorn all over the back seat. We told him. Not gonna work out well for you. No, I want it. It's not gonna work out well for you. I want it. It didn't work out well. And that's what seatbelt played out. God's like, you don't want it. I want it. You don't want it. I want it. Finally, God says, okay, you can have your kid. It doesn't work out well for him. Saul takes advantage of them. He puts his kingdom above their lives. All it for him and not for the people. I mean, it's a horrible kingship. What's happening, though, God set him up for the ultimate king. We see a little bit of a glimpse of that in David next. David has a heart after him, but he still has nothing in comparison. God's saying, I got a king for you if you just be patient. I got it for you if you just, no, I want that right now. I want it. He was showing them glimpses of Jesus. Now he's going to be the ultimate king, but they just couldn't wait. There's a quote by Timothy Keller. It says, Jesus is the only king that if you obtain him, will satisfy you. And whom, if you fail him, he will forgive you. He sings, we think we need addition to God, these relationships, this money, the status, the followers on social media, these things. Comfort, we find our joy. Because if it isn't God, those things are going to consume your life, take over your life, and let you down. So again, the question this morning is, can you say it is Jesus all you need? Jesus plus nothing is there. Can you say that this morning? Or Jesus, and if I could get to this income, or Jesus, if I could just get, Wednesday night, we're going through 2 Corinthians, and 2 Corinthians 1, Paul's saying, I find all my comfort in Christ. He said, I'm thankful for my troubles, my suffering. Dude, you're crazy. He said, no, I'm thankful because when I almost died, I realized it's only him. I have no control. It's him. This morning, that's my question. Is it just Jesus? Is he enough for you this morning? You need to answer that for yourself. Here's what we're going to do. I want to end. I asked the worship team to sing this song again. We sung this morning. Let me read you some of the lyrics this morning. But the second chorus is, for you are the center of it all. My heart belongs to you. You, my Savior, all in all, you're the one. You're the only one. And it gets down to the bridge. It says, my whole life for your glory. My whole world for you only. Everything for you. That's what God's trying to get us to see this morning. It's just him. Are you okay with that? Just him. Can you be happy with that? So here's what I want to do this morning. We're going to end our service a little different. I want them to lead us in that song. And I want you to think of that this morning. Can you make a covenant with the Lord this morning? Say, Lord, it's only you. If you don't give me no more blessings in my life, I'm happy with what I have. If you could say that this morning, as we sing this morning, as we start singing that, if you want to make that commitment during the song, I just want you to stand. Stand if you don't mean it. As we sing this, my prayer is that you say, Lord, you're enough. If I've gotten my eyes off of you and I think I need these things to be happy, Lord, help me realign today and let me commit to you. It's only you. It's only you. You are the only thing, and I'll be happy with that. When they start singing that, if that's you, you'll make a commitment to stand and sing with us. Raise your hands if you want to raise your hands. Come down the altar, however you want to do it. But if you want to commit to that, I'm going to ask you to stand during this song. So I want to ask them to lead us. Pray. Don't take this serious. Listen, this is not just something to do flippantly. I'm going to stand. Everybody stand. No. If you don't mean it, don't stand up. Just be honest with yourself. But if you would say, Lord, it's you plus nothing, and you're going to commit to that, I want you to stand with us. When they start singing, make that commitment.